Hi, welcome to BA Brew. I'm Jonathan.
Hi, I'm Helen.
Hi, and I'm Fiona.
Today, I'm really excited because Helen's joined us, a friend of the BA Brew. She's got more mugs than most to join us for a talk to chat to us about mental monsters. And I'm also excited that Fiona's here with me because this is Fiona's first pod with me on the brew. So I'm quite excited for a couple of reasons. And also, this is going to be what I think is going to be an interesting pod. So we're going to talk about mental monsters, naming and taming your self-limiting beliefs, and also emotional intelligence and how we manage our emotions as business analysts, as change professionals. So I'm going to go to Helen first of all. Helen, where did the idea for this mental monsters model come from? And could you explain to the listeners, the viewers, what it is?
Absolutely. Mental monsters was something that came about all the way back in sort of 2020, when we were going through the pandemic at the time. And I will admit that I was struggling quite a lot at that point. I was trying to juggle being at home with the kids because obviously like, the schools and everything was shut down. And I was also in the middle of like a really big piece at work. It was a massive transformation program that was going on. I had quite a kind of key role in that. And I had been sort of in the midst of like dealing with these big meetings, quite often with some of like the senior stakeholders in there. And all of a sudden, the whole landscape just changed in terms of how I needed to work. So not only were we kind of cast into that like virtual working, but it was trying to kind of juggle lots of different things with the, you know, kids running around in the background. But in particular, in some of the online workshops that I was doing, I didn't have the tools at the time. So kind of like really trying to struggle to do those interactive sessions. And instead of dealing with a small handful of people, there would be like over 100 people that would sometimes join these calls, which was daunting in itself. But more so when nobody had their cameras on, nobody, you know, everybody was very quiet. There was all these people, there was no responses to anything. And it started to really chip away at my confidence in what I was doing in my own kind of skills and abilities. And as I say, like when you kind of combined that with everything that was going on at that time, I really sort of lost a little bit of controlling my own sort of emotions, and that negativity started to really seep in. My children, who were very young, I also kind of noticed they were having like some similar kind of anxieties, perhaps picking up on my emotions. And I wanted to do something to try and talk about it, to try and kind of explain where I was at, which when you're trying to do that with a couple of toddlers, not the most easy thing. So yeah, so I just thought, well, maybe I could just create these little characters, which I did. And I did some drawings to go with them, and actually found that as well as it being a really good way to have that conversation with the children, it was actually quite therapeutic for me. Like it helped me kind of connect with how I was feeling in a way that felt less scary. And I think that was the thing. It was like, it somehow made what was quite a difficult emotional topic feel fun to sort of think about and to address. So yeah, where it kind of came from.
And so I've looked at it and the seeds of doubt monster that you can name it, and you can start then if you want to trying to work out, right, how do I deal with that? Because by naming it, you can then you remove the fear or the unknown of it, naming it and saying, right, well, how do I deal with that? And finding a coping mechanism for whatever it is that is causing that worry or that emotional response. So I'm really impressed you're trying to teach toddlers emotional intelligence as well as the world of business change professionals and business analysts. So wow, quite a crusade. So I want to share, so before my very, very first podcast, I was nervous. And I still get nervous from time to time doing these podcasts. But if I think back to that very first one, if I'd have been able to name, right, I'm scared, or I've got the worry war, whatever it might have been, that might have been quite useful, because then I could have talked to someone that I trusted about what it was that I was going through and try to come up with some coping strategies. Now, I know that Fiona doesn't have this worry wart for going on pods. She's just super excited. She wants to take over hosting and all these kind of things. No, so it wouldn't be an issue for you, would it, Fiona?
The complete opposite of that, Jonathan, as you well know. I actually loved this Mental Monsters because it brings in lots and lots of sort of things that I've looked at over the years. I've worried, I know me and Helen have been on a team leadership course together. We've discussed a lot of these. So when I looked at these, I thought it was fantastic. My time as a teacher, I wish I'd had these, you know, little drawings to help a lot of students go through the same worries. Some people think it's just children. It's not, it's children and adults. And we have to find ways that are going to help. And this would have been really, really useful. So I have actually shared your story with some teacher friends of mine that hopefully they can pass this knowledge on to children as well that are struggling with these things as well.
Wow.
I loved the characters, I have to say.
Which character did you like? Is there a character or a name of a monster that you liked?
For the one that I sort of resonates with me the most is probably the Seeds of Doubt.
Okay.
Actually gave them all little names as well, because I have many Seeds of Doubt depending on what I'm doing.
Different flavors of it.
Yeah. I will say the one thing that I've found that really helps with my Seeds of Doubt, because obviously I've been through lots and lots of different experiences in my time where I've had this, but I've had to push myself through that, especially in a professional manner. The one thing that helped me, and some people will laugh at this, but actually try it because it really does help, is to look in the mirror and have that, just tell yourself, you can do this, you are good enough to do this, you know, swallow the fear and those seeds of doubt and just go with it. And actually you looking at yourself and telling yourself that you are, I think it's all about the positive language you use. If we tell ourselves we can't do something, we won't do it. It's as simple as that. But having that, you know, even if you haven't got somebody there at that time, you've got yourself and you've got a mirror. And it's a really powerful thing to do, because by you telling your brain, actually, you are good enough, you can do this, it's a very, very powerful thing to do. And it will help you to get through those. It's sort of, I mean, Jonathan knows, I always do this. It's like pushing those seeds of doubt away from your shoulder. The mirror helps. So try it if ever you're in that position.
Where you talk to yourself is really important. You do it in front of the mirror, but really regulating and being aware of when you've got that negative self-talk. And I love the idea of flicking the thing off your shoulder. I like to hit them. Go away. The other thing I do, Fiona, I don't know if you've ever done this. If I've got loads of worries and stress, I think of them as being in a backpack, like a rucksack. And I tell myself, throw them away. If there's nothing I can do about that thing I'm worrying about, I can't, it doesn't help me by worrying. So let's throw it away. So that kind of idea of compartmentalizing and throwing it away or flicking it away or brushing it away, I don't know. But sometimes, it, you know, it's a real fear and we do have to examine why am I scared? What is it? What can I do? And find those proactive coping strategies to help yourself. And it's not easy because all the circumstances that we go into can be different, can't they? And if there's massive change like there was in the pandemic and stress at work and trying to do other things, it is quite difficult. How did your kids react to this, Helen, when you showed them it for the first time? Did they engage? I'm just imagining with my two older children, I'm not sure they would engage. Or then maybe they would. It depends what mood they were in.
They still do. I mean, they were three then. They're nine now. They regularly will come to me with a character that they've drawn and they've given it a name. And it's a way that they know how to explain something. And it just feels a lot easier, I think, to talk about it as a third party, as opposed to saying like, I feel this. It's like, well, there's this thing, and you know, it, this is what I think it looks like, and this is how it behaves, and it just helps you sort of start to describe those characteristics, to describe those emotions that you're feeling. So yeah, they actually co-created a lot of those characters that are on there from drawings that they did. So there's one that's Maelstrom, which is like a little hurricane, and it's all to do with overwhelm. That was my son Jack telling me that he had too many choices. He didn't know what he wanted to do. And it was making him sort of feel just like quite upset and agitated. And he described it and he drew it out. And that's where that character came from. And equally the one that was Tremble, the sort of the ball of anxiety, that was my daughter who explained this sense that she'd got something spiky stuck to her and it was putting electricity through her fingers, and that was how she described that. So these characters came from them being able to kind of describe those things. And you know, does it, well, I think I've been really surprised with how much older people, you know, of all different generations have engaged with it. My husband used it recently and he sat there and we talked it through. And I think there's something fun about describing something that you can then draw into a character. So we talked about how he felt stressed at work and it was like a rubber band being stretched. So we created a character called Twang. And it was all to do with how you feel like you've been really, really pulled to the very edges of like breaking point. You're going to snap, you know, you're going to have that sort of snapping sensation. So that was, I think it just feels like a safe way, I think, for people to talk about what can often be quite stigmatized and quite difficult things. But I think the other thing to mention as well is when we think about mental monsters, like there isn't, we're never going to get rid of these completely. And actually, they have a really important purpose. You talked about fear, Jonathan. Like, there's a reason why, from an evolutionary stance point, we still have some of these things. It is, they are there to keep us safe and to help protect us. So it's about managing them and about making sure that the sort of the symptoms of them, if you like, don't get to a point where they are kind of taking over our lives. That's the aim. It's kind of keeping them in check, not completely eradicating them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree. And thinking around, right, what is it that you're experiencing, the emotion? And Helen, you're kind of hinting back to, well, why do we have these emotions? And there are reasons for the emotion. So fear is to help us be protected from danger. So if you don't have fear, you wouldn't ever be worried about danger. You're thinking about prehistoric human being not having fear, and there's a saber-toothed tiger, it's not going to end well. So fear is a real useful thing. But it's that, I don't know, it could be fear of your new job, that new project. It could be fear of meeting a stakeholder for the first time or using a new model that you just come across, or I've never drawn a value stream, I'm fearful. And be able to talk about it might then, right, I can deal with that. We can help each other, I think, a little bit. But I was thinking about some other emotions, and I'm referring to some notes. I did prep a little. But anger, my worry monster at the moment is my internet service provider, and I won't name them on this podcast, but they're causing me to be slightly angry. But the reason for anger is to help you to fight against the problem. It gives you energy to fight against the problem. And so there's a purpose. I don't know what would you call angry Ali or Albert or something. I need to draw one. All right. Albert's getting you today. I'm angry. Yeah. And then you can talk about it with someone, can't you? Which is quite cool.
And that's my recommendation. Like when I sort of talked about this previously, it's really, yes, you can just kind of write down anger when you're identifying how you're feeling. But actually, there's a little bit of science that says whenever you're engaging your imagination and you're being creative, that in and of itself kind of opens up kind of like how your brain is working and developing. So actually taking some time, even if you're not great at drawing, you know, just to sketch something out and get a bit creative with it. It really kind of opens up like the neural pathways in a different way. And the way that you then kind of are problem solving and tackling that is completely different. So, yeah, definitely encourage everybody to kind of find your inner kid with your crayons. Remember, you never used to care when you were a kid what your drawings looked like. You just drew. I think, yeah, same principle here. Just draw it out. See what you come up with.
I think the most interesting thing you said there, though, Helen, is it also takes that stigma away, because it's not you saying this is how I feel. It's sort of having that bit of imagination and creativity. And then you're talking about the third person. And I think it's much easier, and it takes away the stigma of being able to talk through your feelings with somebody, somebody that possibly you might not normally talk to. You know, I'm really thinking about in a work environment, especially when you've been asked to do something, people have this habit of saying, it's all right, I'll just get on with it. I won't ask for the help when I need it, so to speak. I think you get into this mindset then of being able to discuss the fears that you have with people, you know, and creating that really good culture at work as well, to be able to speak about these things.
Yeah, and psychological safety and having your support network where you can reach out to someone at work that you trust if you're experiencing one of these emotions, really, really key. And I think it's on all of us to help create that culture for our colleagues and our peers and bosses and juniors and everything. It's not a hierarchical thing. It's on all of us to help create that positive culture, isn't it? Do we think that business analysts in particular might have a tendency to have self-limiting beliefs? Fiona, what's your experience? Do you think the BAs that you meet and talk to, do you think some of them might have these self-limiting beliefs?
Sometimes I think, because I think it comes down to every single project that you're working on is different. You're working with different stakeholders, different problems each time. Nothing's the same, is it? We know that. It's always changing. And I think that could bring that fear into that, because it's not the same every single time. What I do come across teaching lots of lovely BAs is that they are all open to try new things. And even if it doesn't work out, we learn from it. And instead of saying, you know, dismissing a new technique or something that didn't work, actually really look and analyze why it didn't work in this on this occasion.
Do you think that's linked to the growth mindset then that BAs demonstrate, Fiona?
Absolutely. And I think anybody that does problem solving really has to have that. Otherwise, you would never solve a problem, would you? You'd just be stuck in this, forever loop.
Sorry, mode.
I think we just forget to apply it to ourselves sometimes. And that's the thing. Like, as you've just said, we've actually, as BAs, all got this fantastic skill set and this mindset that we bring to our roles every day. And I think we just forget that actually it's those same tools that can help us dealing with these challenges. And if we kind of think of ways that we can use those, those reframing that growth mindset, as you say, that kind of continual improvements that in ourselves, like sort of smaller challenges, those are all things that can absolutely get us out of this kind of sense of perhaps being stuck in a particular rut or, you know, stuck with a particular problem.
Yeah. And the techniques we've got, scenario analysis, which can be dreadful, by the way. So if you do really negative scenarios, it's not going to help you at all. But you can think through the positive scenarios, SWOT analysis, identifying, right, for this situation, what are my strengths, what are the weaknesses, and then it gives you actions that you might want to take as a result of your weaknesses, or lean into your strengths. What are the opportunities and threats of the new whatever it is that you're trying to do? And we've got that toolkit, and we can ask questions and we can dig into it. I think we're probably quite well placed as a profession. And we often are in those uncertain circumstances because everything's different. And so we're quite used to dealing with this in a sense.
If you think about it, Jonathan, BAs will always do this with stakeholders. They will make sure that a stakeholder feels seen, feels heard, feels safe to contribute their opinions. But as Helen said, we don't always turn that on ourselves, and maybe we should do a bit more of that.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. Brilliant.
I think what surprised me is that when you do it, when you start, if you're the one that starts by talking about these things, how that opens the door for other people. And, you know, you don't have to have, you know, sit down with like your team or anything like that and have like really serious conversation. I think sometimes it's just unintentionally just being honest and open with your own challenges to a point that you feel comfortable. And that does open the door. It role models that kind of conversation for other people. And then you start to find that, yeah, it becomes that psychologically safe space starts to kind of grow by itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask for Have either of you got any practical things that you do if you are experiencing anxiety, stress? And I'll share a few of mine to try and create that sense of openness that Helen, you've just talked about. I walk my dog. Sometimes it's the getting the right piece of music to play. Maybe it's a film or a TV show. Something puts me in a better mood. I'll talk to someone else. They're kind of some of the things I do. What do you do when you're feeling a little bit stressed or anxious? What are your tips that someone might want to explore? Helen, have you got any that you're happy to share?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of some of the breathing techniques out there, particularly like in the moment. So if you are on a call like this and you're just having that moment where you sort of feel, oh my gosh, and you see you can't easily like get up and walk out and then do something, just being able to do like some quite subtle breathing exercises, like while you're sort of sat in there and just like, you know, regulating your breathing. So I think that has been definitely one that I've used. And things like I talked about the 5-4-3-2-1 technique, which is, again, it's an easy one to do without everybody realizing that you're doing it, which is just like looking around you for things that you can see, things that you can touch, things that you can taste, all of that, and you go through those steps. So I'd definitely say things like that. And then I guess my final one is sometimes setting aside time to just sit and have a little worry and just go, right, I'm going to actually purposefully set aside some time to kind of go through the things that are, particularly when you're sort of dealing with overwhelm, those things that I think are spinning ground at the moment. And I'm just going to like write them out. And then maybe I'm going to pick one of them that I'm going to try and do something with. And almost like you talked about, like, you know, dusting off your shoulders or getting rid of something, try and cast the others to one side for now. I'm going to pick that one thing.
Yeah. And that prioritization there and a bit time management and what can I proactively do about it can be coming through. Fiona, any kind of things that you do if you're feeling really stressed?
Everything Helen just said, it's popping all these different models that I've referred to. Circle of influence and concern is a really good one. Think about what can you, you know, what can you have influence over? What can you change? Some things we worry too much about that we can't change. And then what happens is we end up worrying twice, which is no good to anybody. I think the best thing for me, and I forgot how important this is, but I did it yesterday, which is why I'm going to talk about it, is connect with friends. So I met my best friend. I haven't seen her for 6-7 months because we're just so busy. We went for a long walk around a nice National Trust house yesterday. We put the world to rights. You know, we have that great safe space where we just ramble on about stuff that's happening. Nobody's really there to give advice or fix it. It's just having somebody to talk to sometimes. I know I've talked about before the problem-solving duck. It comes to that. If you haven't got that person to talk to, get a plastic duck and talk to the duck. Sometimes just voicing these things out loud really does help to put things in perspective, I think. So, you know.
I love that we brought the duck into the brew, because we've not yet done the problem solving duck on the brew. I think we should at some point have a focused brew on the problem solving duck.
I would tune into that one.
Yeah.
If I'd have thought I was going to say it, I would have brought one of my ducks, but I haven't got one here.
We haven't mentioned the positive character that I know, Helen, we've talked about before. And Fiona, have you got one of your Lego characters?
I have. I was going to bring it up, but I didn't want to keep saying. So I'm a bit of a fan of Helen's writing. She does. So this is my little Lego person. It's sort of the best hair color I could get at the point. But it has got a computer on the front and back, which is very much like me. But Helen, I don't know if you want to talk through the little model as well.
Yeah, so that was from the kind of character crafting talk that I've done previously, and it all is relevant in this space as well. So, I talked about how personas can be really helpful, and a persona is really just it's a different version of yourself, like one that you purposely make as awesome as you can. So, like, what are the qualities that you want to develop? What's the person that you really want to be? So, if that is someone who has bags of confidence and he's really good at public speaking, or who finds networking really easy, it's imagining yourself as that person And what can really help when you're doing that is to have some kind of like physical totem or item to kind of really connect you with that person that you've created. And there's lots of people out there who have famously used, and it can be things like a piece of clothing, Martin Luther King wore glasses to make himself feel like he was commanding. I use a Lego figure, and that's kind of what I've encouraged people to do. You know, create your own little minifigure, and that is you. Like, hold them in your pocket, take them around with you, and just remember whenever they're sort of sat there in your hand or in your pocket that that is who you are. Like, you're just becoming that person.
Yeah. Brilliant. Right. We're coming towards the end then. So I'm going to ask Fiona, any final thoughts, observations, anything you wanted to add?
Yeah. The other technique that I used to use is sometimes if we think of a big problem, it can be really overwhelming. So actually taking that bigger problem and writing it down, but then thinking about the small steps that you can take to achieve that bigger problem. And then celebrate those small wins. Don't just think of the final goal, but celebrate each of the small wins as you go. And you will find that you get there in the end.
I like that. I really like that. Helen, any final thoughts from yourself?
I think it's just, you know, nothing is insurmountable when it comes to these emotions. They can feel really big in the moment, and they can feel awful. And I think if you are getting to that point, the starting point is always just to find somebody to talk to, even if it's the duck, but find someone to talk to and find a way to kind of like recognize what it is that you're going through. In doing that piece, in recognizing what it is that you're dealing with, in finding someone to have that first conversation with, that is the first best step that you can take.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Well, we're going to close there then. So I just want to say thank you, Fiona, for joining us. Very pleased we've done our first pod together. Helen, thank you for coming back. Friend of the brew, it's lovely to see you again. And I hope you're back again soon with your next model, whatever that might be. But you keep coming out with these really interesting models. So thank you. Keep doing what you're doing. If anyone's got any ideas for future podcasts, please do email us. The email address is babrew@assistkd.com. And then could I please ask, if you found today's pod useful, please do share it with your colleagues, like, share, and subscribe on social media, comment. There's an article that we've got on the Assist website. We'll post it when we post this podcast, so you can see the article about mental monsters. Have a look at the model. But thank you, everyone, and thanks for joining us again. Thank you.